Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
People delighted to hear Mike Murphy on the radio. People talking about the likes of Mike. People talking about Murphy's America and everything. Here's one great one from John and Sonny Leitrim. Great to hear Mike Murphy back in the wireless. Mike would have made a great broadcaster if he'd managed to overcome his shyness. Hear, hear. Now, whether it's from Loose Women or Coronation Street or countless other shows, you will know the actress and TV personality Denise Welsh. But last year, she shared videos of her in real time going through an episode of her depression, and there was a massive response. And now she's written a book about her 30 years living with depression. But let me tell you, for me, I think she describes depression better than I've ever seen it described. Denise, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Brendan. Lovely to be here.
Denise, I really thought that in very plain, simple terms, you explained to people who might not understand and maybe people who struggle with it themselves and can't describe it, how depression works. Just a few things about that. So one is that you colour code your depression. We're talking about colour coded travel zones now, but you colour code the depression.
Grey and black.
Yeah. Explain.
Well, the book is called The Unwelcome Visitor, and I'm glad that you said I'd describe it in plain and simple terms, because as quite a plain and simple girl, that's the only thing I could do, to be honest. But I think that's why it's so relatable, because you can read as many books, you know, medical books on depression, but nothing beats reading something about lived experience. The color-coded is that I call my depression the unwelcome visitor. And when it comes in a black cloak or a grey cloak. And it's always been the way that I've described my illness as a separate entity. And so when my illness comes on, it tends to be more endogenous and reactive, meaning that it's organic. So I don't have any control over it, whether it comes on. Otherwise, to be perfectly honest, the last few months, I would have probably been in a deep depression if it was purely reactive.
But, as in driven by events.
Well, it's not usually driven by events, which it is for a lot of people. It can be, Brendan. There are times that obviously I get overwhelmed with stuff and it triggers the adrenaline, cortisone, chemical mixture of chaos. But generally, mine tends to come when I least expect it. So last year, driving up to the Northeast with a car full of my friend and my godchildren, and having a wonderful time driving up to the Northeast. And we got to the Angel of the North, nothing but laughter, frivolity in the car. And I felt, as I describe it, the colour leave my life. And everything goes from colour into grey and stays sometimes at grey and otherwise goes to black. And depression is often described, and more by people who haven't had it, as persistent sadness. And it couldn't be less than persistent sadness. When my mum died 8 years ago, I was persistently sad. I was overwhelmed with grief and all of those things that you are meant to feel when you are bereft and bereaved. But I didn't get my depression. But then driving up to the Northeast last year for no reason, things changed in my body. And that's the difference of having clinical depression or major depressive disorder. And that's what this book is trying to explain, that this is not something that you can say to somebody, look, you look fine. You've been in bed for 3 days. Why don't you get yourself up, get some fresh air and get outside? I'm not saying that with mental stress and anxiety, such as a lot of people are going through now, understandably, that deep breaths, meditation, going outside, getting fresh air doesn't help. Of course it does, but it doesn't help with the illness. And so not only have those of us who have it, I've lived for 30 years with an often crippling, debilitating, isolating condition that I still have to prove I have, on top of being so poorly.
And people tend to think of it as that you're feeling down, but you make the point that it's actually more like feeling nothing.
It is. Well, depression depresses, it says, it's exactly what it says on the tin, Brendan. It depresses every single emotion. So you feel nothing. You lose the ability to feel joy, excitement, love, hate, anger, fear. Everything is gone. And I used to, it's a very strong analogy, but it describes it, that I used to say that if I'm in a depression and someone came to the door and said, coronavirus is gone, it's left, we never have to worry about it again. Or if they said, your whole family have been wiped out by an aircraft disaster, I would feel nothing. That is the difference to it. And therefore, that's why we read the tragic headlines, because a life without feeling anything is no life at all.
Yeah. Isolation is the other thing that depression is quite isolating. You make the very good point, though, that you don't want anyone around, but the fact that you don't want anyone around makes it worse as well.
Well, it's basically a lot of people. I think one of the things that this book has managed to be successful at, which is great, is that there is a very underrepresented bunch of people, and that they are the people who love and live with those with depression. It is very, very hard to know what to do. And I've spoken to people who've sadly lost their partners or people in their family who have taken their own lives as a result of not being able to deal with it. And those people have said, I just thought I was doing the right thing by chivying them along. And of course, that's, I understand that people do that, but all my friends and my husband, who is wonderful, does. They know I'm poorly. My husband tries to, if he can, take everything out of my diary that is not essential. And when I say essential, it has to be really essential these days. And take everything out of my diary. And my friends, they say, Lincoln said, you've got your thing. I still call it my thing. Just to let you know, we're here. Bye. Love you. That's it. That's all I need. It's wonderful to have that. But I don't want people around me because it's an isolating illness. And but the less, the more I can just take myself off, if that's to go to bed or just sit on my own, the quicker it will lift. It's when you've got other, it's when you get your illness and you've got other things that are compounding it. It's hard. I mean, I stopped drinking 8 years ago, and I want to say to people that taking alcohol and a previous drug issue out of my life doesn't cure depression, but it stops compounding it. And that's why it's been the best thing I've done, not just for me, but for the people who love me.
Yeah, because you excuse me, you don't describe yourself really as an alcoholic, but you had similarities in that you didn't have that off switch and stuff. But
yeah,
it was more that you were
I don't mind labeling myself as an alcoholic. I don't have a problem with it, Brendan. Some people do, but I don't.
Okay, but it was really you were self-medicating your depression, yes?
Yeah, I was. I was self-medicating my depression. And, you know, and anybody who has clinical depression will know that you will do anything to stop the pain. And the reason I talk about it is so I can share my experiences to stop people taking the ultimate final step, because you will do anything. And what I did was I took to drink and drugs because initially they made me feel better. But even people who don't have depression and even people who don't have a drink problem know that drinking usually the next day brings you nothing but anxiety and trauma and the fear, as people call it. But I'm not the drink police. I'm not saying don't enjoy a drink. Of course, you know, if it didn't have that effect on me, I'm sure I still would. Although, as I say, we're seeing a massive increase in alcohol issues at the current time, obviously. And all the, my book spent 8 weeks in the Sunday Times bestseller list. Now, I don't say that out of arrogance. Obviously, it's a lovely personal triumph that it did that. Mm-hmm. But in a way, it's also quite sad that 30 years on, that at 30 years, I've been talking about this and still mental illness is misunderstood. And that's still why, against so many critics at the moment, I'm still speaking out about trying to find a parity between physical illness and mental illness, because we still are nowhere near it.
And you do kind of go with the notion that this is, for you, is a kind of a chemical imbalance or whatever. And it started when you had your first baby, who some people will know is Matty Healy from the 1975.
My first baby, who's now 31, Matty, who is the lead singer and founder of the 1975, which are, you know, the hugely successful band. Ireland love them. I've been to Ireland to see them on two occasions, and it's just amazing. You know, sadly, that can't happen at the moment. But, you know, fingers crossed, it won't be long before. I had Matty when I was 31, and I had no social issues whatsoever. I was happily married to their dad at the time. We had, you know, a bit of money in the bank. We were desperate for a child. I had the most wonderful pregnancy, one of those blooming women in pregnancy, and not a day of psychiatric or mental illness in my past whatsoever. And so, therefore, I was completely blindsided when 5 days after I had a panic attack, even though I wasn't anxious, and all of my lactation process stopped. Now, these days, that would be a massive red flag of a huge hormonal shift. Those days, the midwife, who I didn't know, came around to my house and said, that's not very good. You're going to have to go out and get some bottles. That only normally happens if a spouse or a parent dies. Brilliant. The doctor I went to see, my late mum was sat with me, and I was in an almost catatonic state, literally could hardly talk, with the depression was so thick. And the doctor, probably a woman of about my age now, leaned forward and said, "The thing is, dear, I had 5 children and I just didn't have time to get depressed." So when I could see the light at the end of the tunnel, and I don't know if I would have had it not been for my family, who never doubted for one minute that I had an incredibly serious illness and that it should be treated that way. I don't know where I would have been, but what it did do, it gave me the fight in me to say, I don't care if people try to say, don't talk about this, because they did. It was usually out of protection of me, like my agent at the time, who was about 110, you know, and he said, oh, darling, you can't be talking about this. People will think you're mad. You'll never work, dear. And I said, well, Dennis, to be perfectly honest, if people won't employ me because I'm being open about living with a mental illness, then I don't want to work for those people anyway.
But it must be difficult being in show business, and there is pressure there to be up and to perform, and at particular specified times in the future as well. It must make it very hard, does it?
It does. It doesn't make it hard to talk about it, because the one wonderful thing about our industry is that it is a classless industry. No one cares where you're from, who you are. You know, there's no homophobia. There's no racism. It's a wonderful environment in which to work. And of course, there are many, 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 many creatives, huge amount of creatives who suffer from clinical depression. You know, you just need to look through the history of comedians and see which ones suffered from depression. So it's a very open environment
in
which to talk.
But the doing of the job.
But doing of the job, absolutely. You know, and the thing is, I have had an episode, which I guess we used to call a breakdown. I have had a breakdown on stage playing the lead in a play, with the words coming out of my mouth and my hands starting to lock and my mouth twisting to the side with depression. That is how the mental affects the physical. And that's what a lot of people don't understand. And it was the most frightening thing. And I didn't do theatre for 12 years as a result of it. Yeah. So it's absolutely terrifying. But, you know, people say the show must go on, but sometimes the show can't go on and we have to accept that.
You're keen to point out that having depression is not a sign of weakness. Do you think there still is that kind of idea out there?
Yeah, I do. Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know what I would say, Brendan, and it sounds really selfish, but I would like everybody in the world to have clinical depression for 15 seconds and then for it to go and never darken their door again, just so that they'd know. You know, another sort of example was years ago on Loose Women, 15, 16 years ago, I was doing an episode with an actress who was coming on as a sort of sometime panelist. And she said, she was completely and utterly wonderful, but she said, and I said, well, save it for the show, because it's always much more interesting, I think, when we say it live. And her dad was dying. And she said to me, but my dad is dying. Why is your depression worse than mine? And I said, it's not worse, Terry. It's just different. I said, if you went home tonight and your mum said they've found a cure for dad and he's going to live, would your depression lift? And she said, well, of course it would. I said, well, mine wouldn't if my dad was in a similar situation. It wouldn't change. It's an illness and we have to treat it as such. And that is why, with what's going on at the moment, there is a massive lack of respect from the mainstream media as to how the fear-mongering is affecting people's mental health. So the prolonged effect because of COVID is going to be so great. And that's why I continue to be very vocal about mental health always, whenever I can.
Yeah, and look, Denise, I think you've done some service today. A lot of people texting in to say, Sandra here texting, Denise is amazing. I've suffered from depression and anxiety for 35 years. I've never heard anyone describe how it feels as well as Denise. I can identify with everything she says.
Thank you.
Thank you, Denise. And lots of other texters, people saying they're seeing their depression suddenly in a whole different way. And Denise, I really got a lot out of the book. It's called The Unwelcome Visitor, Depression and How I Survive It. Thank you very much, Denise Welch.
Thank you so much, Brendan. Thank you. And lots of love to your lovely listeners for the messages. Thank you.
Email brendan@rte.ie.